From executive producer Isaac Saul, this is Tangle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Tangle Podcast, the place we get views from across the political spectrum, some independent thinking, and a little bit of my take. I'm your host, Isaac Saul, back from a couple weeks out of the country. I was in Bali the last 2 weeks, working a bit, visiting a friend, doing some traveling and touristy stuff, but recording the podcast was quite difficult while overseas, so huge shout out to John Lull, our Tangle editor and producer, and now sort of co-host also, as he's been tagging in a ton for me. Really appreciate him taking over and love listening to him on the pod. The silky smooth John Lull voice. I'm a big fan. So thank you, John. I am jumping back on the saddle with a pretty big story, I think. Trump announced his abortion position on Monday. He released a video about this. So we're going to discuss that story, what exactly Trump said, some of the reactions to it, etc. But as always, we'll kick things off with some quick hits. First up, President Biden announced a new student debt relief proposal that could cancel up to $20,000 of interest for roughly 25 million American borrowers. A previous attempt by the Biden administration to cancel student debt was rejected by the Supreme Court. Number two, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu set a date for Israel's ground invasion of Rafah, but did not disclose that date. Number three, the United States proposed a new Israel-Hamas ceasefire and hostage release deal to secure the release of 40 hostages in exchange for a ceasefire and 700 Palestinians being released from prison, including 100 convicted of killing Israelis. Hamas said it did not have 40 living hostages who met the humanitarian criteria of being women, female soldiers, men over the age of 50, or men with serious medical conditions. That revelation has thrown the negotiations into doubt. Number four, a judge rejected former President Trump's attempt to delay his criminal trial in New York, scheduled for April 15th. And number five, more than 200 chemical plants will be required to curb toxic pollutants under a new regulation announced by the Biden administration on Tuesday.
Former President Donald Trump taking heat from the Democrats and the Republicans. It's all over a campaign video where the presumptive GOP nominee said each state should decide its own abortion laws.
Donald Trump now says he believes it should be up to the states to decide their stances on abortion rights. The former president had previously discussed the idea of a 15-week federal ban. Trump unveiled his stance in a video message on his platform, Truth Social. That was this morning.
The states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state.
On Monday, former President Donald Trump released a 4-minute video announcing his position on abortion. Trump, who teased the announcement over the weekend, appeared to endorse the current state of abortion law, saying it should continue to be left up to the states in the post-Roe era, while declining to endorse any national limit on abortion. In March, Trump's campaign floated a national 15-week ban. "Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights," Trump said. "My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint. The states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state." Trump, who once again took credit for the Supreme Court's decision to end Roe v. Wade, added that many states will be different and some will be more conservative than others. "At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people," he said. He also said that he supports exceptions to abortion restrictions in instances of rape, incest, or when the life of the mother is at risk, and endorsed in vitro fertilization, or IVF, praising the Alabama legislature for quickly passing bills to protect IVF after a state Supreme Court ruling put the procedure in legal doubt. The announcement and the decision not to put forward a specific limit on abortion highlights the political difficulties Republicans are facing on the issue. Since Roe v. Wade was struck down in 2022, Democrats have received a surge of support for campaigning on abortion rights, winning several ballot amendments in tight races across the country by focusing on abortion rights. Simultaneously, many Republican politicians have seemed less willing to endorse strict federal prohibitions. For instance, 4 years ago, 51 Senate Republicans voted for a 20-week federal ban, according to Politico. But shortly after Roe v. Wade fell, just 10 Senate Republicans backed a 15-week federal ban. While Trump's position received immediate endorsements from many Republicans in Congress, it also drew condemnation from pro-life politicians and anti-abortion groups. Former Vice President Mike Pence, who said he won't endorse Trump in 2024, called the video a slap in the face to millions of pro-life voters. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham said he respectfully disagreed with Trump and believed a national ban was necessary. "We are deeply disappointed in President Trump's position," Marjorie Dannenfelser, the president of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, said. "Unborn children and their mothers deserve national protections and national advocacy from the brutality of the abortion industry. The Dobbs decision clearly allows both states and Congress to act." Some of those groups are still holding out hope that Trump will use his executive power to limit abortion across the country if he is reelected. Trump, though, has long pledged to find a compromise on the issue that would make both sides happy and responded to critics like Graham and Dannenfelser by suggesting they study states' rights and focus on helping Republicans win elections. Today, we're going to examine some reactions to Trump's announcement from the left and the right, and then my take. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break. First up, we'll start with what the left is saying. The left thinks Trump's position on abortion will hurt him with his base. Some say Trump is moderating his stance on the issue due to political pressure. Others suggest the media's coverage of Trump's comments ignores his role in scaling back abortion rights. In Newsweek, David Ferris argued that Trump's big abortion gamble won't save him. At first glance, Trump's needle threading on this issue looks astute. Dobbs has clearly been the GOP's Achilles heel for the past 2 years, and Trump most certainly does not want the election to be about reproductive rights, Ferris said. But publicly supporting abortion rights in the more than 20 states where the procedure remains legal could cost Trump with his most committed voters, white evangelical Christians. 84% of white evangelicals voted for Trump in 2020, along with 57% of white Catholics. You must therefore wonder how this group of high-propensity voters that is absolutely critical to any Republican victory this November is going to take this news. My guess is not well. The most religious white evangelicals want total victory, and Trump just told them that they won't get it, Ferris said. Trump's struggles here are illustrative of how returning to abortion to the states did not settle the issue at all. By stocking the Supreme Court with early middle-aged religious radicals who obliterated the Roe consensus on abortion, Trump all but guaranteed that it will be front and center in our politics for the foreseeable future. In the Washington Post, Aaron Blake wrote about Trump's cynical punt on abortion. "Donald Trump would like you to know that he has decided not to take much of a position at all on abortion restrictions, and he would also like you to know that he is punting on this issue for transparently political reasons," Blake said. "It is a remarkable microcosm of just how frightened the Republican Party is of its newfound ability to restrict abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022. Now, the GOP's presumptive presidential nominee is basically trying to wash his hands of the issue. Abortion rights supporters see in Trump's comments a wink and a nod to the anti-abortion movement, an implication that he'll still do its bidding if he's elected, but that he can't just come out and say that, and maybe so. But this is also an issue on which the formerly very pro-choice Trump has evolved in a politically expedient way before. That suggests he might indeed toss the movement under the bus to the extent he thinks that's the right political call. Trump's guiding light, after all, is what's good for Trump." In his Substack, Oliver Willis criticized the media for helping abortion ban architect Trump escape blame. "Donald Trump is the reason Roe v. Wade fell. There's no way around this fact," Willis wrote. "The public has rejected this extremism from coast to coast in red states and blue states. Trump understands audience feedback like he understands little else, and he is trying to keep away from the blowback. The mainstream media is giving him able assistance in this by presenting his abortion about face as if it has no context. This is utter garbage, but it is at just about the right level of complicity we have come to expect from the mainstream media. It is as if a serial killer like Jeffrey Dahmer or Ted Bundy made a statement opposing murder, and the media ignored the piles of bodies they racked up. Laid bare here is the media's habit of cleaning up for Trump, presenting an image of a malevolent force in America that bears little resemblance to the man and the movement behind him. Trump is no idle observer of the strife now occurring in America under Republican efforts to restrict abortion. He is the architect. All right, that is it for the left is saying, which brings us to what the right is saying. The right is mixed on Trump's comments, with some calling them an insult to the pro-life movement. Others frame his stance as a politically savvy move to neutralize the issue ahead of the election. Still others say his comments reflect an imperfect strategy for how to message on abortion. In The Federalist, Jordan Boyd wrote about Trump's mixed messaging on abortion and IVF and how it plays right into Democrats' electoral strategy. Trump's declaration on abortion rights only further confirms that his once-celebrated pro-life track record doesn't meet voters' demands of a Republican president, Boyd said. In a clear attempt to absolve his campaign of what bad faith actors have told Republican politicians is a Dobbs disconnect, Trump came out of the gate on Monday incredibly soft on abortion. Trump seems to think that because he nominated some of the justices who decided Dobbs v. Jackson, his title as the most successful pro-life president is permanently protected. He's wrong. Leaving abortion up to the states means Trump is giving Democrats and abortion giants a free pass to target Republican strongholds with deliberately deceptive ballot measures that promise uninhibited abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy, Boyd said. To fortify voters' defenses against the infiltration of leftist radicalism, Republicans must choose their words carefully and affirm the majority of Americans' desire to limit abortion to at least the first trimester, not just on the state level, but also nationally. In the Washington Examiner, Tiana Lowe Doscher said Trump takes the centrist mantle and winning message on abortion. Despite President Joe Biden positioning himself as a centrist on abortion policy throughout the 2020 election, he has repeatedly embraced the most extreme Democratic Party line throughout his presidency, Doscher wrote. By contrast, former President Donald Trump proudly has taken his centrist mantle on abortion policy and thus the winning electoral message from his 2024 opponent. Trump's stance is sure to incense the staunch social conservatives who will crawl over broken glass to re-elect him president, regardless of his abortion platform. But to the disaffected independents and double haters who dislike both candidates, they crucially favored Trump in 2016 and then Biden in 2020, Trump's pro-life federalism could provide a major incentive to reincorporate them into his coalition, Doscher said. In supporting pro-life laws for the states, Trump is adopting the legally correct abortion platform, but also the electoral winner. In National Review, Dan McLaughlin suggested Trump is half right on abortion. Trump understates the radicalism of Democrats on abortion. They want abortion to be affirmatively subsidized and promoted by the federal and state governments, McLaughlin wrote. The right strategy for pro-lifers now should be to protect pro-life state laws from being repealed at the state level or overridden by the federal government, and secondarily, to advocate for expanding such laws in other states. Right now, the movement has its hands more than full with the first task, and Trump hasn't helped, branding a 6-week ban terrible during the primaries. Even if Trump is now going to stick his new reversal of course and stop demonizing pro-life state laws, however, just intoning leave it to the states doesn't answer the question of what the federal executive branch can and will do on abortion, McLaughlin said. A framework of life is national, abortion is local, modeled on how the Republicans approached slavery in the 1850s, would be a better approach that allows for moral clarity while reassuring abortion supporters that the purpose of a pro-life administration is to take the federal thumb off the scales and let matters be actually decided at the state level. All right, that is it for the right and the left are saying, which brings us to my take. So, on the one hand, there is nothing really ambiguous about Trump's position. It's actually quite simple. The states decide, and the people in the states get to vote. But that simple position doesn't actually tell us what Trump's view on abortion is. It tells us how Trump thinks abortion law should be enforced, which is a different question than the one many people wanted answered. Indeed, many news outlets didn't accurately report on Trump's comments. The lead across the press was that Trump said abortion should be left to the states, but that isn't what he said. He said abortion will be left to the states. He made a statement of fact based on current abortion law. He did not endorse what he thinks should happen. In that sense, stating that the states will determine the issue doesn't really tell us much of anything about how he would act on abortion. It doesn't even tell us what Trump would do if the Senate passed the 15-week abortion ban, a proposal his campaign endorsed earlier this year. Would he sign that bill? What if Democrats control the Senate and he is president, an admittedly unlikely combination, and a bill gets passed protecting abortion up to 24 weeks? Would he sign that bill? Voters want presidents to lead. They want them to have positions on controversial issues like abortion and then make their case to the country. What I think is happening here is threefold. First, Trump's position on abortion is probably out of step with his party. Over his decades of public life, he has seemed to send more signals that he is pro-choice than pro-life, at least until he became president. Second, I think he understands Democrats have a major advantage on this issue, and he wants to take it off the table in 2024. So saying the states will decide is one path to doing that. Three, I don't think he holds a conviction on the issue strongly enough to advocate for his own view and is making a political decision. If he makes the case for strict limits on abortion, then he loses the same voters Republicans are losing in states like Ohio and Kentucky. If he makes the case for less stringent federal abortion restrictions, then he risks losing pro-life and evangelical voters he absolutely cannot afford to lose in 2024. Still, Trump's position here is going to run the risk of alienating parts of his base who insist on a Republican nominee who stands firmly against legalized abortion. And if the response from pro-life groups is any indication, I don't think this video neutralized the issue. It is commonly understood among many fervent pro-life political activists that a lot of Republicans pay lip service to the pro-life cause for votes, but don't earnestly believe in it. But in this case, Trump isn't even saying what those groups want to hear. Will this position work for some voters? Sure. It's worth acknowledging that Trump is very, very good at speaking in ambiguous terms and not taking hard positions on issues that divide the country. Understanding how the political winds are blowing and taking out a position popular enough to win is one of Trump's great gifts. He understands his audience. And I don't say that in a demeaning way. I genuinely mean it. He's also good at framing things in a way people on both sides of an issue will be able to hear positively. There will be some independent voters with a moderate stance on abortion and some pro-life voters living in a ruby-red state who watched Trump's speech yesterday and both leave satisfied. That doesn't happen if he takes a firm stance on the issue. Additionally, as anyone who has watched the entire video could attest, Trump used a lot of language that spoke more directly to a broad swath of voters. While most mainstream media outlets focus on his comments about states enforcing abortion law, he also said this, quote, "You must follow your heart, or in many cases, your religion or your faith. Do what's right for your family and do what's right for yourself. Do what's right for your children. Do what's right for our country. And vote. It's so important to vote. At the end of the day, it's all about the will of the people," end quote. Trump also told voters that Republicans must win the 2024 election to restore their culture and implied heavily that his position on abortion was all about winning the 2024 race. His statement puts a lot of Republicans in an interesting spot. For instance, Senator Steve Daines, the Republican from Montana, who is head of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, told Axios that Trump's comments are reflective of the fact that Republicans do not support a federal ban on abortion. He described any suggestion that they do as a lie you're hearing from Democrats to scare voters. Well, that'd be news to his constituents in Montana, given that Daines was one of two co-sponsors on the 15-week abortion ban bill that the Senate Republicans tried to pass in 2022. Daines' change in posture is a great example of the ways in which Trump still leads the party, even on issues like this. His comments are, in all likelihood, the beginning of a 2024 messaging pivot from the right, one that is intended to make this issue less important to swing voters in the upcoming election. The real question now is whether that shift will do more to allay the fears of those voters or anger the pro-life right that sees an opportunity to enshrine abortion restrictions into federal law. I think the odds are better that Trump's video helps his election prospects than hurts it, but it'll be hard to parse its impact until we see the election results and some exit polls. We'll be right back after this quick break. All right, that is it for my take today, which brings us to your questions answered. This one's from Nathan in Madison, Mississippi. Nathan said, "What happens in the presidential election if, say, thanks to Kennedy pulling enough votes from the other two, none of the candidates for president accumulate the minimum 270 electoral votes in November?" So the short answer is that if no candidate receives 270 electoral votes in November, Trump is likely to win. But I'll break down why. Let's imagine the scenario. Joe Biden and Donald Trump are locked in a close race where they split battleground states, but Robert F. Kennedy Jr. blitzes a state like Arizona and ends up winning their 11 electoral votes. Each state certifies the results of its election on December 11th, at which point everyone will officially know that no candidate will receive 270 electoral votes. On December 17th, the electors in every state will convene to give their votes to a presidential candidate. Although electors almost always support the candidate who won their state's popular vote, there is no federal law that binds electors to do so. A state's representative who breaks with the popular vote is called a faithless elector, which 17 states do not have laws against. We saw this in 2016, when 7 electors cast faithless votes. That election was unusual because the candidates were both polarizing and the electoral result was not close, meaning a protest vote from a faithless elector was more likely but also somewhat meaningless. None of those faithless electors gave their support to the opposing candidate. In a competitive race, it's highly unlikely that any elector would break from that precedent to give a candidate their state did not support enough electoral votes to meet the 270 threshold. When Congress tallies the votes on January 6, 2025, if no candidate receives a majority of 270, the election would be sent to the House. Each state's House delegation gets one vote and votes independently, and the candidates favored by the delegation's majority gets their state's vote. The candidate who receives the support of a majority of states would win. 26 states currently have Republican House majorities, meaning the election would almost certainly go to Trump. The most uncertain aspect of this scenario is who would then become vice president, which would be decided in the Senate by a simple majority vote. Given the current deadlock in the Senate, it's a total crapshoot to imagine the result. Would the Senate try to honor the outcome in the House and support the winner's running mate? Would they support a unity ticket with the other candidate's running mate? Would they vote for Kennedy? It's very tough to say. But I'll give the usual caveat I give to these hypotheticals. Right now, this whole situation is pretty unlikely, but that could change, which we're going to talk about right now in our Under the Radar story. Last week, the Nebraska legislature rejected an attempt to change state rules from awarding electoral votes by congressional districts to awarding them on a winner-take-all basis. Nebraska has a unique system of dividing up electoral votes. It awards 2 electoral votes to the statewide winner and 1 electoral vote to each of the state's 3 congressional districts. In 2020, President Biden won 1 of Nebraska's 5 electoral votes by winning Nebraska 2, which is home to the state's largest city, Omaha. The fight over Nebraska 2's vote could have huge implications in 2024. In a realistic scenario where Trump flips Arizona, Georgia, and Nevada, but Biden wins Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Nebraska's 2nd congressional district, he would win the election with 270 electoral votes to Trump's 268. But if Nebraska goes to a winner-take-all system, it'd be a 269-269 tie. Republican lawmakers are expected to try to pass a change once more before the state's 2024 legislative session closes on April 18th. USA Today has the story, and there's a link to it in today's episode description. All right, next up is our numbers section. The percentage of U.S. adults who say they favor allowing abortion at least until 6 weeks into a pregnancy is 73%, according to a 2023 AP NORC poll. The percentage of U.S. adults who say they would support a national ban on abortions after 16 weeks of pregnancy is 48%, according to a February 2024 Economist YouGov poll. The percentage of U.S. adults who say abortion should be legal in all circumstances is 24%. The percentage of U.S. adults who say the issue of abortion is important to them is 76%. The percentage of U.S. adults who say abortion is their most important issue is just 5%. The percentage of U.S. adults who approve of how President Joe Biden has handled abortion issues during his term is 38%, and the percentage of U.S. adults who think abortion rights will be weakened or lost entirely if Donald Trump wins in 2024 is 41%. All right, and last but not least, our Have a Nice Day section. As a 10-year-old, Harrison Johnson from North Carolina completed a history project on Pearl Harbor. Afterwards, he remained interested in the subject, reading books and old newspaper accounts, even going so far as to speak with survivors. Following a visit to the Pearl Harbor National Museum in Oahu, Harrison was motivated to go even further. Now, as a wizened old 11-year-old, Harrison has started a fundraising campaign called Harrison's Heroes to raise $100,000 for Pacific Historic Parks, the nonprofit that stewards the Pearl Harbor Memorial. In particular, Harrison hopes to expand the story of the attack to include heroic acts from men and women of color and other underrepresented members. So far, he has raised $81,000. Good News Network has the story, and there's a link to it in today's episode description. All right, that is it for today's podcast. I am glad to be back here with you guys. As always, if you have thoughts or feedback, you can reach me, Isaac, I-S-A-A-C, at readtangle.com. And if you want to support our work, you can go to readtangle.com/membership. We'll be right back here at same time tomorrow. Have a good one. Peace. Our podcast is written by me, Isaac Saul, and edited and engineered by John Wall. The script is edited by our managing editor, Ari Weitzman, Will Kadak, Bailey Saul, and Sean Brady. The logo for our podcast was designed by Magdalena Bakova, who is also our social media manager. Music for the podcast was produced by Diet 75. And if you're looking for more from Tangle, please go to readtangle.com and check out our website.